wish I knew how it would feel to be free. I wish I could break all the chains holding me. I wish I could say all the things that I should say.
You are listening to the Prison Voices Project, a radio storytelling project highlighting the voices of people impacted by the prison system. The Prison Voices Project airs on the second and fourth Thursday of every month from 10 to 11 a.m. on WGXC Hands-On Community Radio, 90.7 FM. If you are listening to the program and would like to share your story with the prison system, or you have ideas for the program, or you would like to get involved, please write to us at 704 Columbia Street, 2nd floor, Hudson, New York, 12534. Hello and welcome to the Prison Voices Project. I am your host, Corey Fisher Hoffman, and thank you so much for tuning in today. Today's Prison Voices Project show will feature New York Voices Unbroken, which is part of the Prison Poetry Workshop, which can be found online at prisonpoetryworkshop.org.
You're listening to the Prison Voices Project on WGXC 90.7 FM. I'm Alexandra Cox, and I'm a member of the Prison Voices Project Media Collective. Today's show is about poetry produced in prison and includes a rebroadcast of a show we did in 2014. A couple of announcements about exciting events happening in the Hudson area. Tonight, Thursday, October 8th at 6 p.m., at Kite's Nest at 108 South Front Street in Hudson, New York, there will be a fundraiser for the Victory Bus Project. The fundraiser requests donations of $10 to $50 and includes bartering. The fundraiser will feature live music, food, a book signing, a mobile photo gallery, and much more. For more information, text 917-704-3354. The Victory Bus Project is based in the area and run by Jalal Sabor, who's a member of the Prison Voices Project Media Collective, and he's one of the educators at Kite's Nest. The Victory Bus Project provides fresh organic produce and transportation for urban families whose loved ones are incarcerated in upstate prisons. The fundraiser will feature Natasha Bowens, who's a writer, photographer, farmer, and food justice activist, and author of the blog Brown Girl Farming, where she writes about food sovereignty, community, and cultural empowerment in agriculture, while highlighting people of color growing food and revolutionizing the food system nationwide. She'll be signing and selling her new book, which amplifies, celebrates, and preserves the voices of Black, Latino, Indigenous, and Asian farmers and food activists through storytelling and photography. The teenagers of the Kite's Nest after-school program, Space 101, are co-organizing the event and will be preparing food for the evening. Please come out tonight, Thursday, October 8th at 6 p.m. at Kite's Nest. There's a sliding scale donation asked for the Victory Bus Project, and it's going to be a great event. Another great event that's going on in the Hudson area is Beyond the Bars, Incarceration, Justice, and Creative Expression, an exhibit happening in Catskill, New York at the GCCA Catskill Gallery at 398 Main Street in Catskill, New York. The gallery's hours are Monday through Friday, 10 to 5, Saturday, 12 to 5, and the admission is free. Beyond the Bars is a series of art and storytelling events in Greene and Columbia counties that is happening between September 12th and November 7th. The events are sponsored by the Greene County Council on the Arts and feature work from a variety of collaborating organizations and individuals. Again, the Beyond the Bars art exhibit is on until November 7th in Catskill at the GCCA Gallery at 398 Main Street in Catskill, New York. And I really encourage all of our listeners to go to the show if you can. And we're going to be doing some interviews about the show in upcoming weeks. The Woodstock Jewish Congregation Task Force to End the New Jim Crow invites you to a series of discussions on racism and mass incarceration using Michelle Alexander's book, The New Jim Crow, and the study guide resource for Jewish communities. If you're interested in attending the book read, it will be taking place on five Tuesday evenings from 6:30 to 8 o'clock at the Woodstock Jewish Congregation at 1682 Glasgow Turnpike in Woodstock, New York. The first read is taking place on October 13th, and the title of the reading is The New Jim Crow, The Rebirth of Caste, and the facilitators for the reading are Rabbi Jonathan Kligler and Susan Griss. Again, that's on October 13th at the Woodstock Jewish Congregation at 1682 Glasgow Turnpike in Woodstock, New York. If you're interested in attending these exciting readings, they're all free and open to the public. You can go even if you're not reading the book. If you're interested in learning more about the readings, contact Diane Colello at 845-246-0929. Again, that's the Woodstock Jewish Congregation Task Force to End the New Jim Crow, inviting anyone from the public to a series of discussions on racism and mass incarceration using Michelle Alexander's book and the study guide resource for Jewish communities. For more information, contact Diane Colello at 845-246-0929.
Here is New York, Voices Unbroken, on the Prison Voices Project, coming from the Prison Poetry Workshop.
This is the Prison Poetry Workshop. I'm Ren Smith. When Angie went into labor, she was on Rikers Island in New York City, and it was during this thing called count time. Every prisoner had to stay perfectly still until they were counted. It can last an hour.
And so it took for me to like knock on the cell door, on my cell door, for the next inmate to knock on their cell door to finally make it down to the staff to let them know that I was going into labor.
It's the kind of thing that creates a need for expression.
That was a moment when I felt like I really needed to lean on writing.
Today on the Prison Poetry Workshop, New York and its many prison poets. This is the Prison Poetry Workshop. I'm Ren Smith.
On today's program, we are doing something very special.
That's from a 1979 recording made at New York State's Attica Prison, when a University of Missouri literary magazine decided to take stock of prison poetry. Sound familiar?
These men will be reading their own poems and poems by other prisoners, and they are joined within the walls of Attica by their guest poet of the day, Sonia Sanchez.
A poet famous for writing about the civil rights movement and for epitomizing black arts movement feminism, Sonia Sanchez passed through Attica's gates 8 years after its legendary 1971 uprising. Though she'd never been incarcerated herself, she'd been married to widely praised prison poet Etheridge Knight. As Sanchez took the stage for a reading, memories of Attica's insurrection and its casualties must have still lingered.
It's good being here in Attica.
When she recited a piece about the death of civil rights icon Malcolm X,
but the poem should be called Malcolm.
The poem resonated in more ways than one.
Do not speak to me of martyrdom, of men who died to be remembered on some parish day. I don't believe in dying, though I too shall die, and violets like castanets will echo me.
Demanding better treatment, during the revolt, prisoners held Attica for days. In the end, authorities stormed the facility, and the conflict's death toll, including both guards and inmates, reached 43. Sanchez's words echoed Attica's losses.
What might have been is not for him or me, but what could have been floods the womb until I drown. It's a poem for a man by the name of Malcolm, who was very important to a whole lot of us.
Today, on the Prison Poetry Workshop, we go looking for prison poetry and prisoner poets in New York, visiting legendary lockups like Rikers Island to discover poetry as transformation. First, we head to Mount McGregor, a medium security prison in upstate New York. It's about a 50-minute drive from Albany, and as it comes into view, looks a lot like the setting of the next Stephen King novel. Clung to the side of the 1,070-foot mountain that is its namesake, McGregor's brown brick looms tall and shadowy, encircled by razor wire and thronged by forest.
Feminist epic poem, in fact. So what I think our next project is going to be is that we're going to be writing our feminist epic poems.
That's poet Kara Benson, starting a session of McGregor's poetry workshop. McGregor is ostensibly a tough place. According to the Correctional Association of New York, about 54% of its inmates are serving time for violent offenses. Yet, we might as well be in a liberal arts class. The 10 men in forest green uniform taking instruction from Kara today don't blink at being asked to channel their inner Gloria Steinem. For now, though, they'll be exploring more familiar themes. The award-winning poet whose work they're discussing today, Jemmy Santiago Baca, did 8 years in a New Mexican prison and wrote stunningly about it.
Okay, so this is the Jemmy Santiago Baca poem.
How we carry ourselves.
Edwin Santana, also known as Mo, begins reading.
How we carry ourselves. To others in prisons, I am the broken reed in this deathly organ. I am those mad glazed eyes staring from bars, the silent stone look that knows like other stones the smell of working feet, knows how long and wide a human can spread over centuries, each step until we now step on dust and rock of prisons. I could not throw my feelings away, shoot them like wild horses, stone them like weeping dirty prophets. Could not machete them, pioneering a new path. I sought no mountain, no brave deed. I sought to remain human, to look and feel wind bless me. Chicanos, blacks, whites, Indians, we are all here, our blood all red. We are all filled with endurance and have tasted the blade, smelled the gun's oily smoke of death. We are still hunks of gear and frayed ropes, our hands the tool sheds, our heads the incessant groan of never-ending revolving wheels in an empty, gaunt warehouse. Our blood dripping from steel joints like grease and oil onto granite floors. I meant to say, you can turn away from this. If you can take the hammering, they will give. If you can hold on while they grip you and hurl you ragefully at the ground. If you can bite your teeth when they bend you, and still you do not fit, you can be who you are.
In the poem, Baca talks about holding on to humanity and a place where that can be difficult.
You can see the morning and breathe in God's grace. You can laugh at sparrows and find love in yourself for the sun. You can learn what is inside you. You can know silence. You can look at the dark gray machine around you, souls going up like bellows of black smoke, and decide what you will do next. You who are the main switch, who turns everything off, but you breathing, smiling, struggling, turning yourself on. Jemmy Santiago Baca.
Naturally, it's a poem that resonates. As the men were pondering it in their dormitories the night before, Edwin went to fellow prisoner Chris Taylor to ask about the final line. You are the main switch that turns everything off. But you, breathing, smiling, struggling, turning yourself on.
He asked me, well, what is it? He asked me, what is this guy talking about, turning stuff off and then turning stuff on? What I explained to him was that we oftentimes spend our time in prison doing the opposite of what this poem suggests, which is to turn ourselves off and turn the environment on. So what I was explaining to him was that if you go back to the other stanza where he said, you can be who you are, and turning the environment off because it's just a place.
And that right there, when he brought that up, I started thinking about it, so I read it again.
Lines are dissected, inspected, and dissected again. This poem hits home. The faint smile inmate Mike Adam wears would seem to hide what's going on inside.
We speak about or write about what's in front of us, and I'm still waiting to empty myself of the rage. I find myself, I look back over the last five poems I wrote, and it's all, as you say, you know, Mike, tell us why you're angry. And I just can't, I'm waiting to empty myself of this so that I can get beyond that. And unfortunately, this poem came up, so it takes me back to it. Anyway, this is my response.
But if Mike sees the rage in Baca's poem, he also sees its call for transformation and echoes that theme in his response poem.
Speaking, I rise from a night doused in guilt, ignited by shame and self-crucifixion and recrimination. I reanimate. Folding my hands, I pray for a reason, then bend low and put on humble shoes. If so, then perhaps I might risk walking with dignity.
As you can imagine, the power of redemption is a common theme here. Edwin, for instance, writes about it in his Baca response poem. He's pretty hard on both himself and his fellow inmates.
We are the desolate ones, shackled to each other through this experience called doing time. Pillars of the law have been smashed by the sledgehammer that is our reckless behavior. We should be ashamed. They have tried us for trying to shave the corners of a square life meant to be squarely lived. We have been inducted as members of a shameful group. But behold, my comrades, redemption is not above us. It's as tangible as the sweetest fruit picked by a farmer. The road to it starts at change. We must embrace it like a warm blanket on frozen winter's night, like medicine when you are ill, like a mother's lovingly hug at the gates of freedom. Today is Amendment Day, pledged to stop the ripples of wrong we have created in the sea of life. Time has refined us. The world will benefit from our kin. God will no longer shed his tears upon the earth because of us. You cannot spell preservation without serve. A cage only surrounds us. It doesn't define us. And neither does a scratch record, but it does skip.
As Edwin finishes up his poem, there are nods of affirmation around the room.
Nice.
So that kind of inspired me to go that way. I don't know if I responded to it correctly, but it moved me in a way that I just had this. Lately, I don't know if y'all know this about my poems, but lately I've been on a road to redemption in my poems, so to speak.
So what does Edwin want redemption for? It's all over the internet, courtesy of newspapers like the New York Times and the New York Post. Edwin's crime involves a stop and frisk in an old .32 caliber Smith & Wesson revolver. The search went bad when the revolver, which had been tucked in Edwin's waistband, say reports, hit the ground and accidentally went off, injuring a police officer. It's obvious that Edwin has used his prison time to do a lot of soul searching about the incident, to figure himself out.
You know, like, I'm sorry for what I've done, you know, like, you know, it's crazy, but, you know, the road of redemption isn't easy, you know, and nobody said that, so, and I have a lot to redeem for.
And it's the road of redemption, it's littered with metaphor.
And it's littered with metaphors.
Later today, he'll bravely stand before a large gathering of inmates to declare his identity. Coming up, we'll look at how poetry is helping some of McGregor's Workshop alumni hold on.
It's almost as like you're blanketed in the spoken word. It's almost like the spoken word is coming at you from every different angle. Some nights I felt like it was like we were all breathing new life into each other. We all walked out of there with enough energy to go through another day and feeling rejuvenated.
And hear a poetic account of what it's like to give birth while imprisoned at Rikers Island.
I actually had to give birth handcuffed to the bed. And so understanding that, yes, I was an inmate, but I was giving birth. You know, I think any mother shouldn't have to give birth like that.
You're listening to the Prison Poetry Workshop.
You are listening to the Prison Voices Project, and you've just been hearing New York Voices Unbroken, produced by the Prison Poetry Workshop Radio Series.
This is the Prison Poetry Workshop. I'm Ren Smith. We're scouting out prison poetry in New York State. You just peeked in on the poetry workshop at Mount McGregor's Prison in Wilton, New York. Poet Kara Benson started the program in 2005 and has helped inspire many a talented prison poet. But what happens to those deep souls once they make it back into the outside world? An hour south of Mount McGregor's, a veteran of the poetry workshop is trying to make ends meet.
My name is Doug Anderson. Right now I'm 52 years old. I've just been released from prison for serving a 31-year sentence.
Derek has been out of prison for 9 months. He's happy to be back at home with his wife and kids, but the family has fallen on hard times. It's the end of the month, and the rent is due. Although he's found work as a cab driver, his wife recently lost her job at a local pawn shop, leaving the household short on cash. So today, we're heading with him to downtown Albany, where he hopes a government employment training specialist for the city can help him find extra work.
I'm supposed to be here to see Mr. Taylor. Mike Taylor. Yeah.
Mike know about it?
Yeah, he knows about it.
Mike Taylor is the specialist in question and seems to genuinely want to help. The two sit in a large conference room. Mike dressed in a collared shirt and tie, Derek in t-shirt and jeans. They know each other. Derek has become a fixture there. In the past, Mike has cautioned Derek that it takes time to get on your feet after being released from prison. But Derek feels himself running out of road now.
I don't know what type of employment that you may know that may be available at this time, but I'm in an immediate need situation.
Mike knows it's hard to find employers willing to take on someone with a record. He gives Derek a list of employers who have done so in the past and says he'll offer them some incentives to hire Derek.
But what I'm willing to do is to offer them a reimbursement situation to where you can work for them for 40 hours a week. At the end of the month, they contact us with your timesheet, and we give them 50% of what they paid out to you. We give them 50% of it back.
Derek grows anxious. He says Mike gave him the same list weeks ago. Some jobs he's qualified for require recertifications or licenses he can't afford. As a cab driver, he's already paying $100 a shift for what's called a medallion, basically a rented taxi permit. Mike advises him to stay positive.
I'm going to get you to the means. Once I get you to the means, it's going to be up to you to sell yourself.
Back home, Derek sits on his front step with his 16-year-old son, watching traffic go by. He digs out a poem he wrote while participating in McGregor's poetry workshop called Criminal Psychology. It speaks to the cynicism he's feeling today.
All right. It goes, you and I were taught, I thought, the lessons of many lives lost in mixed numbers that bled to believe change in therapy would become more than an investment of job security or a bunch of word gymnastics criminally articulated. Like a boring bedtime story told to a fatherless son, criminal. The story? Parole is denied at this time because we believe to release you would appreciate the nature of this crime. Let's rewind. I thought the experience, oppression. I thought the time progression. I thought the lessons learned made us better, not worse. Then again, I never made your introduction because our good mornings were always your goodbyes. That's criminal psychology.
If Derek finds himself slipping further into despondency, he knows what to do with the heartache. Write it down. He's still a dedicated poet, passionate enough about his work to send new material to a friend of his from his Mount McGregor days via text. Carefully, he pecks out each stanza on his cell phone. The friend who lives all the way in New York City is this guy.
Sean Dalpiaz. I live in Brooklyn.
Sean has been out of prison for 4 years and has been lucky enough to land a job. He ended up marrying a co-worker, and the two are now expecting a child. With everything that's going on, he still finds time to read Derek's poems and to reply with some of his own.
Let's see if I can pull it up.
He flips open his phone and reads one he wrote about a woman he saw outside a local grocery store.
And I was sitting outside of C-Town and in a car, and I was just watching this lady. She caught my attention, an old woman, like someone's grandmother, obviously. And I just wrote a whole poem on her, so I called the poem C-Town. At the supermarket, she stands alone, cold wind chipping at her bones. EBT shame, she plays her part. At the bus stop, she stands strong, fidgeting with flimsy plastic bags, her tethered coat drags. On her way down the block, her eyes tear dreams and catch the schemes of peripheral men. Her grandsons of anarchy hold up in the basement, stubbed out Newports and half-full pints of adolescent chagrin. In her kitchen, the pork fries and memories are forbidden to die. Her black Jesus smiles his wooden grin, a second crucifixion. On Nana's wooden paneled walls, he has seen her ball many a times. At the door of her bedroom, she approaches cautiously, like the Boston PD in Watertown. At the foot of her bed lies a wooden television. In the kaleidoscope gleam, she tears a dream of an anointed pope from her homeland. She gets on bended knee, praying hell will stop using her as his dream.
Sean says that back at McGregor, both he and Derek were devout about attending the workshops and reveled in prison readings called speakouts. Speakouts are held in the prison chapel, where voices ricochet along wooden rafters.
It's almost as like you're blanketed in the spoken word. It's almost like the spoken word is coming at you from every different angle. Some nights I felt like it was like we were all breathing new life into each other. We all walked out of there with enough energy to go through another day and feeling rejuvenated.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Speak Out.
Hoping to better understand what Sean means, we go to a speak out, and it's anything but disappointing. As night falls and storm fronts roil the horizon, 60 inmates have packed into a mountainside church. It's nice. There's not much here that reminds them they're in prison. There are stained glass windows and a pipe organ, for goodness sake. Edwin Santana, the guy keen on redemption and metaphor, is given a glowing introduction by Mike Adam, the inmate working on the rage in his poems.
I'd like to introduce to you Mo Santana.
Edwin looks cool and confident as he takes the podium.
Thank you, Mike. You didn't have to do that, brother, but I appreciate it.
He sets the stage. Clearly, he's about to go epic.
Many people ask me around the facility, you know, they ask me why we come down to the poetry class and every Monday. Well, in order to answer that question, I ask some questions. And I say, have you ever heard of Jane Cortez, Walt Whitman, Adrian Castro, Maya Angelou, Alice Notley, Hannah Wiener, Muhammad Tawfiq Ali? And they stop me right there and they say, wait a minute. I have heard about Maya Angelou. So, you know, I say, okay, all right. I say, you guys, so, you know, you're working with something. But I say that these legendary poets that we review them down in the class. And, you know, and I have learned that to know them, to know these poets, is to be inspired by them. Well, I have met them through Kara Benson, and I have been inspired by them. So this is my poem, autobiographical. I am enjoying the fast life at the most expensive venues, witnessing well-to-doers drop $4,000 a night for a suite. I am enjoying the fast life on Gates Avenue. I am a Puerto Rican American. I was born in Puerto Rico. I wrote speeches for the Puerto Rican Nationalist Party. I met Albizu Campos, visiting the campo, as Hector Lavoe sang. I hopped on the J train to America. I am a Puerto Rican American. I sold piraguas on the corner of the Avenue of Americas. I am only half blind. I once rode a malfunctional Ferris wheel at the Coney Island of my mind. There is always darkness before the dawn. I'm a pessimist, optimistic about life and death. I am a complex organism. I may have paid to see a lethargic artist splash tears across a bloody canvas on a White House wall, but I just remembered that I'm just very forgetful.
You can tell from the look on Edwin's face that the applause is satisfying and cathartic. You're listening to the Prison Poetry Workshop. I'm Ren Smith. Before we head downstate to New York City, here's something else on the power of Speak Out Nights. Randall Horton teaches poetry at New Haven College in Connecticut. He also spent 15 years in the prison system. One winter, he took a trip to Mount McGregor's with Kara Benson to witness a speak out. His thoughts on it naturally take poetic form.
It's called Poetry Reading at Mount McGregor for Kara Benson. The mountain is vertical and snaky in Kara's car. Powdered snow has been scraped to the edge of the road. Trees stripped naked, leafless, brittle twigs drained by the brutality of winter. She tells me to watch for wild turkey and deer, which is a godsend. I need excuses to think outside myself. To not speculate if getting a PhD means I've accelerated to stupidity. Only when I expunge the contents of a Parker received last Christmas, unbuckle my belt, agree to a search, do I believe I have re-entered state prison without hearing the word guilty. For years, my brain tried to sketch a diagram where I was not here, here being a correctional facility. Immediately, the black boot heels, the jangling keys, the cell doors closing, the pretentious laughter, even the way an inmate spits spitefully. Here, I remember when I smell the blues in the walls. We exit one building into another, arrive at the gray brick chapel where tonight poetry is a sinner's prayer. The ceramic Virgin Mary and white Jesus acquiesce to olive drab men surrounded daily by three layers of circular razor wire. Their memories connect each day to a dream discarded. The cathedral ceiling cradles poems read like a mother would her firstborn. It's a sound sweeter than gospel, almost sweet as a release date. More complex in syntax than mosaic-stained windows, weaving tapestry of words stronger than bright. Years ago, I occupied this place, a collective crucible for anguish, legal pad and see-through pen, searching for the correct combination of alphabets to help me escape. How do I say welcome me? I am your brother.
You just heard Poetry Reading in Mount McGregor for Kara Benson by poet Randall Horton. Now to New York City. This is the part of the program where we ask you to pick up a pen and write some of your own poetry. To get that going, we visit the NYC borough that's home to Yankee Stadium in search of the right teacher.
Okay. So my name is Victoria Sammartino. I'm the founder and executive director of Voices Unbroken.
We meet Victoria in the offices of Voices Unbroken, an organization she founded which makes creative writing workshops accessible to incarcerated youths. Victoria is a poetry teacher who got her start in the 1990s, running youth poetry workshops at Rikers Island. Since starting Voices Unbroken, she's expanded those workshops to other facilities. But the work at Rikers remains the centerpiece. She came up with this exercise she wants you to do while teaching there.
I had an opportunity to work with young people who are in solitary confinement on Rikers Girls, and I thought a lot about them and a lot about how some of the best writing I've ever heard in my entire life was written by those girls.
But Victoria doesn't want anyone to get the wrong idea.
It's okay, so let me just say, solitary confinement's an awful, terrible place, and we as a society should be ashamed of ourselves that we isolate people like that. That said, I think there might have been days where I was the only like civilian, so to speak, that the young people that at the time that I worked with came in contact with. And so I think there were young people who had a lot of time with their thoughts, and for better or worse, right? And they were, and some of them were not people who identified as writers, right?
In any event, Victoria developed poetry activities her students could do anywhere, even solitary. The one she'll do with us today is called Declarations.
And it uses a poetic device called anaphora.
You probably never heard that term, but hang tight. Victoria will explain it in a moment. For now, here's a poem she wrote using anaphora.
I hate mornings that start too early. I hate missing people who once held me. I hate knowing there is more mourning to do. I hate heartache, violence, injustice. I love knowing the right words. I love express trains. I love unlocking the door. I love finding my way home. I want smoother afternoons. I want to roll my tongue more gracefully. I want to say goodbye less often. I want to do my part. I believe there is beauty everywhere. I believe in pleasant surprises. I believe in keeping promises. I believe sometimes you just know. I demand that we treat all children like our children. I demand that we listen to each other. I demand that no one has to be lost for us to find our way. I demand that we make the future brighter than the present. I have seen that a fresh coat of paint changes everything. I have seen that sometimes the good stuff is messy at first. I have seen gates slam open. I have seen the best of us. I have seen change.
Do you hear what she's doing? The use of repetition? That's anaphora.
The first stanza is I hate, and it goes for four lines. The second stanza is I love, and it goes for four lines. Then I want, I believe, I demand, and I have seen. And so I think if anyone wants to give that a shot, and you could also make up your own beginnings. So you might want to do I dream, or I wish for, or I look forward to.
This exercise is an opportunity to do some self-assessing, to put your feelings under a microscope, blow them up. Focus on what you love. Focus on what you hate. Don't be afraid to make strong assertions.
I mean, the poem it says, I really do love express trains, you know? But it's the moment to say, wow, I really love that, you know? Or it's like turning on the faucet and going like, cold water, like New York has great water. The Bronx has really good water. And so saying like, I love Bronx water, you know? And just that'll be the moment when I, you know, that day I'll be thinking about what I love and I'll see it everywhere.
So pick up something to write with and get started. Then, if you'll be so kind, mail them to Prison Poetry Workshop, P.O. Box 448, Wilmington, North Carolina, zip code 28402. That's Prison Poetry Workshop, P.O. Box 448, Wilmington, North Carolina, 28402. Or submit them to prisonpoetryworkshop.org. Coming up, we'll hear more from Victoria and talk to some Voices Unbroken students. You're listening to Prison Poetry Workshop. Stay with us. You're listening to the Prison Poetry Workshop. I'm Ren Smith. When Patrick Matthew went to prison in 1996, he said it felt almost like a relief.
Now, I remember once, like, just, it was like a primal silent scream, like, I need time. So when I was on Rikers Island, people thought I was insane because I was like laughing in my cell because I realized, you know, be careful what you ask for. You got it.
Patrick was arrested for breaking into a neighbor's apartment in Manhattan in the mid-90s. He maintains his innocence and says everyone in New York was quick to prosecute in the no-excuses Giuliani era. But at the point when he was arrested, Patrick's life had kind of stalled. His wife had split with him and moved his kids down to Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And the peak of his career as a stage dancer and actor, when he toured with many famous directors of the day, had passed.
Because you have to understand, it's like when I went in, I had already been successful. I mean, I had been favorably reviewed as a concert dancer by Jennifer Dunning of the New York Times, Jenny Schulman of Backstage Magazine. And when I was in the city between 95 and 96, I just felt absolutely lost.
Despite the fact that he maintains his innocence, perhaps inscrutably, he saw his prison term as time to study. He took lots of courses and filled his cell with books.
You know, I mean, truly the 10 years was not a burden for me because I did everything. I mean, the only thing that I didn't do, and it's because I didn't have time, they had a sign language course. I would have loved to have done that. You know?
But it was only when he was on the outside that he found a new pursuit, poetry. He showed up at a writer's workshop for ex-offenders one day, looking to ask the instructor for help writing a memoir.
Didn't even know what was meant by creative writing. You know, it's like I was writing essays and legal briefs. But I had a book that I had started to write while I was in prison. And somehow I convinced myself that I could walk into that workshop and convince who was leading it to edit the book for me. Right?
His plan was to sit in the back and chat with the instructor afterwards.
As I sat, it dawned on me that I might have to actually participate in this writing thing before I could broach that subject.
Before he knew it, Patrick was participating in an exercise. Here's the assignment the teacher gave. Workshoppers were to pick from a group of postcards and write a poem about the image on the card. Patrick says he picked up his postcard without looking and instantly regretted it. It showed jazz great Duke Ellington.
I was horrified. I was like, what words could I possibly find to pay homage to this legend, this giant? I almost tossed it back in, but then thought, like, you know, I would pressure myself to have to write brilliantly about the one I consciously chose. And so his prompt was simply to describe it. So I began to describe it. And that is the first piece of poetry. It turned out to be the first piece of poetry that I've ever written. I never knew there was, like, poetry in me.
Patrick still has the poem he wrote that day memorized.
Black tails, white shirt, top hat half-cocked, meticulously white bow tie, half smile, well-trimmed mustache. From days past, he clearly is, a time when speakeasies were the craze and black men hid sophistication because American trees bore strange fruit. Yet, through fingers on ivory keys, rhythmic melodies controverting horrors of his time, nourishing all time, flowed from his soul, the Duke in black and white.
Poetry can be a powerful tool for prisoners on the inside, but it's also useful for those on the outside. That workshop, run by a nonprofit called the Fortune Society through the New York Writers Coalition, transformed Patrick's life, so much so that 6 years later, he's leading it. Today, a half dozen ex-offenders in their 20s and 30s circle up and look to Patrick, who's bursting with energy and restless in his seat, still every bit the kinetic dancer he once was.
My name is Patrick. I'm with the New York Writers Coalition.
It's not like this is a room full of dedicated poets. The students have come to fulfill a requirement for their GED. But Patrick always bets his students will become as absorbed with writing as he has. He recently put together a poetry anthology of some of his writers' best work called Seven Upper. And today, his optimism is rewarded.
The workshops are not literacy workshops. I'm not going to collect anything. I'm not going to grade anything because self-expression cannot be incorrect.
Patrick makes sure students get to express themselves without judgment. In general, though, they just listen to each other. A succession of prompts are given. Students write freely, share, and then move on. Patrick starts today's session off by having students respond to the prompt, I am from. When they're done, They get up and read their poems in front of the class.
I'm from the planet farthest away from the sun. I'm from the coldest, darkest planet in the universe. I'm from Harlem, where you might find a brother panhandling for nickels and dimes to get that first bottle of wine. And then down the block, you might see two bullies trying to take a little boy's lunch money. And on. But there's one good thing about Harlem. Whatever happens, you know you're in the good old USA.
The room snaps instead of applauding. You know, like beatniks. You can tell Patrick is enjoying himself, reveling in the idea of helping people find a safe time and place to engage the transformative powers of the written word. Things a more formal class might not be able to provide. He gives one more prompt. Hunger.
Personally, I've never been hungry anytime I wanted something to eat. My southern mother from Macon, Georgia, down south, would whip up some fried chicken, potato salad, collard greens, and a pitcher of Kool-Aid, and I would eat. Just in case she had to work late, which sometimes she did, she taught my two older brothers how to cook, so they would prepare dinner. Oh yeah, she would also prepare breakfast for me just before she went to work. I am her baby, you know, which would consist of a bowl of oatmeal or farina or grits.
The response is simple. It's just a memory. Patrick's life and his time in prison has been about reacting to any prompt life gives as positively and as naturally as possible. So yes, it's simple. But for Patrick, that's all it needs to be. We'll end this hour with New York City poet Angie Ortiz. Hers is a story of life and death, where death comes first. She says a few days before her 11th birthday, she lost her mother. Here's a poem she wrote about all the pain and agony she felt about the disease that took her.
The title of this poem is AIDS. I hate you because of the way you carry yourself. I hate you because you're fatal. I hate you because you destroy families. I hate you because you're selfish. I hate it more that you travel in stealth mode. I hate the fact that you took what was mine and can't give it back. I hate what you did to my family. My brother has no memories, my kids, of no one who meant so much to me. My brother was 2 and I was 8. She died 2 weeks before saying happy birthday to me.
But Angie didn't learn to put these feelings into words for a very long time. As a kid, she acted out.
I was angry. I was hurt. I didn't quite understand the disease itself. And back then there was no medicine. And so I felt neglected. I felt like someone took something away from me and that was it. I had nothing.
Without her mom around, Angie found herself in the foster care system, bouncing from group home to group home. As a teenager, she ran off and learned to survive on her own.
I taught myself, I raised myself in the streets, and all I knew was how to struggle and how to make ends meet the way I knew how. So if I had to sell something, I was selling it. If I had to steal something, I was stealing it. And, you know, obviously when you do harmful things to others, you know, it does tend to come back to you. You know, you do the crime, you pay the time. You know, clothing, money, how to eat. And so those things constantly kept me in jail.
Angie was in and out of Rikers Island. It seemed like nothing would ever change. But then something did. She got pregnant.
I had my first daughter when I was incarcerated. And so that was a moment when I felt like I really needed to lean on writing.
In 2000, at the age of 18, Angie had met Victoria Sammartino. Victoria, that writing teacher who taught us about anaphora earlier in the show, founded the poetry workshops at Rikers.
I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to be a part of the poetry class.
Since Angie wouldn't come to the poetry workshop, Victoria brought the poetry workshop to her.
It was almost like a correspondence. I would bring her the activity I'd done in the work we had, I had done with the participants in the workshop, and she would let me give it to her.
She would come and she would take me like out of cosmetology and nail technician and try to trick me. Like if I wrote a poem, like she would choose it to put in a magazine and things like that. And so that's how we started.
And this is not with a lot of like fanfare. I mean, until once we got to know each other, it was different. But like she would let me give it to her very nonchalantly. And then I would, the next time that I was there, she would have a poem written and she would give it to me and I would give her another activity. And then I would bring back the type.
Angie became a serious writer and that would help her process a lot of what was about to happen.
Angie tried to sign up for the nursery, but she was told she couldn't. According to prison rules, her criminal record was too serious, officials said. But both Angie and Victoria refused to accept that. Luckily, there was an appeal process.
I had fought to get into the nursery on Rikers Island because they denied me because my classification was too high. So, with Victoria's help, we appealed, and I won. And I got to have my baby with me on Rikers until it was time for me to, until my time was up, because the babies, they're only allowed to stay with you till they're one. So on that note, I got to leave with my baby, and so everything turned out okay.
But before Angie got to her happy ending, she had to give birth in a jail with a harsh reputation. According to Angie's account, giving birth at Rikers was a surreal and difficult experience, especially since she ended up going into labor at one of the worst times possible, one of the moments in the day guards aren't likely to tolerate unscheduled interruptions.
It just so happened that it was count time, and so when there's count time going on, no one is allowed to move in the building because they have to count all the inmates that are in the whole entire facility.
Angie also had another problem. The pain she was experiencing was so blinding, she could barely talk.
And so while the count is going on, I'm like knocking on my cell door and I could like barely scream because I was having so much pains.
The guards didn't seem to be able to hear Angie's desperate knocking. Luckily, her fellow inmates knew just how to deal with the situation. They formed a kind of human telegraph.
And so it took for me to like knock on a cell door, on my cell door, for the next inmate to knock on their cell door to finally make it down to the staff to let them know that I was going into labor.
Angie says even after guards figured out she was having contractions, they didn't exactly swoop in to rescue her. She claims they refused to take her to the hospital until after count was done.
I waited about a good 45 minutes.
Angie says the guards weren't exactly nurturing.
They were actually very mean. When I finally got over to East Elmhurst Hospital, I actually had to give birth handcuffed to the bed. And so understanding that, yes, I was an inmate, but I was giving birth, you know, I think any mother shouldn't have to give birth like that.
While Angie knew at standard procedure to handcuff violent offenders at hospitals, it was still hard for her to take. Angie wrote several poems about her ordeal.
I wrote about how much I hated it. I wrote about how much I wish my mom's was there. You know, maybe I would have a different turnout in life. I definitely wrote about it.
Being rushed in slow motion, handcuffed to the bed. Remember calling my mom with bloody tears as I would grasp at breaths, but the chokes and more I seemed to take each time. I'm running out of breath. I want to hold my mom's hand, but I can't. Instead, I'm holding bars with cuffs making my hands swell and red. Finally, disaster's over, but my baby girl's here, Leah Destiny Ortiz. Excited I was, thrilled that she was here. Holding her now, walking shackled. Looking my baby right in her eyes, not even knowing that if I looked that one time, it was my last.
Raising a child in the Rikers nursery is as strange as you'd think. There are always social workers and healthcare professionals around, watching, and you're sometimes denied access to your own offspring, Angie says.
At times it was very hard, you know, people telling you what to do with your child, you know, not being able to lay down with your baby, even though you're supposed to lay down with the baby back in the crib. But, you know, just having those moments, waking up in the middle of the night and, you know, going to go check on your baby. So it's a pretty hurtful feeling.
Still, she says, as a young mother, she was grateful for the support she got.
They teach you how to hold your baby properly. They teach you how to lay the baby down properly. They teach you how to have eye contact with your child, which sometimes as a parent, you won't even realize it. But if you're feeding your baby, you tend to look elsewhere when your eyes should be constantly looking at your baby.
13 years later, Angie is transformed, a proud mother of four living in the Bronx. She works with a new leadership program Victoria has developed at Voices Unbroken, sharing her story with other young women and helping them unpack their experiences through writing. For her, poetry is her legacy. It's something her children can read once she's gone, a way for them to understand the changes she's gone through.
I always say if I pass away tomorrow, I know for a fact that my voice will be heard, and it'll be heard through my poetry.
Thanks for listening. Prison Poetry Workshop is produced by Andrew Parsons with executive producer Nick Zaberla. The rest of the Prison Poetry Workshop team are producers Julia Botero, Paul Vandekar, with special help from Hannah Sheehan and Judith Tenenbaum. Special thanks to Mount McGregor's Correctional Facility, Rachel Lyons, and Voices Unbroken, Coda Brown, and the New York Writers Coalition and the Fortune Society. You can find more poems, blogs, and even videos at prisonpoetryworkshop.org. You can also send us your prison poetry at Prison Poetry Workshop, P.O. Box 448, Wilmington, North Carolina, 28402. Prison Poetry Workshop is a project of Appleshop. Support for the Prison Poetry Workshop in part comes from the National Endowment for the Arts, Creative Capital, Kentucky Arts Council, the Doris Duke Foundation, and the Nathan Cummins Foundation. I'm Ren Smith, and remember, put pen to paper and start writing. We free sinners be.
That does it for our program. You just heard New York Voices Unbroken from the Prison Poetry Workshop radio series. And that was produced by Nick Zaberla, as well as Andrew Parsons, and hosted by Ren Smith. Thank you so much for tuning into the Prison Voices Project. If you would like to hear that program, as well as many of the other shows we've produced, you can go to wgxc.org and click on Archives and search Prison. The Prison Voices Project shows will come up. And thank you so much for tuning in. Join New York Against Incarceration and Justice on Monday, May 5th. Cornel West will be the keynote speaker at a noon rally in the East Capitol Park in Albany. The rally will be followed by a march and legislative visits that demand a stop to solitary confinement, parole reform, release of aging prisoners, an end to discrimination of formerly incarcerated people, and a Truth and Reconciliation Commission that examines the racism and injustice in the prison system. For more information on the day of action or to find out about transportation, contact nysprisonerjustice@gmail.com or call 518-434-4037. You have been listening to the Prison Voices Project, a radio storytelling project highlighting the voices of people impacted by the prison system. The Prison Voices Project airs on the second and fourth Thursday of every month from 10 to 11 a.m., on WGXC Hands-On Community Radio, 90.7 FM in Greene and Columbia counties. If you are listening to the program and would like to share your story, or you have ideas for the program, please write to us at 704 Columbia Street, 2nd floor, Hudson, New York, 12534. If you have feedback about what you have just heard, you can email us at feedback@wgxc.org. Thanks for listening.
I wish I knew how it would feel to be free. I wish I could break all the chains.